I had only the intellect, supplied in its workings by the knowledge that came from the phenomena of the purely physical and, as I thought, by that great faculty called reason, which, as a fact, is a wonderful faculty, but in its exercise it is dependent upon, first, its own development, and next, whether that development has been along the lines of and in accord with truth. A reason merely because it is a reason is not a guide that can be depended on, for reasoning in an erroneous way must necessarily lead to conclusions of error, and merely calling or believing that these conclusions are the results of reason does not justify the belief that the conclusions must be correct and veracious. Reason can be mistaken and featured by error, just as can the senses, and, hence, if you read the writings of the philosophers and metaphysicians, and also scientists, you will find that things declared and accepted by these men in one age have been repudiated and rejected by the successors of these men in later ages. And so, when I wrote considerably, and was very largely read by what was considered to be the thinking class of men, and especially those whose researches led them along a similar line of study and subject matter as my own, I declared certain doctrines or principles connected with these metaphysical and philosophical matters that I now know to be wholly erroneous, but which at the time I firmly believed to be things of verity, because largely they were based on what I thought was the true workings of reason, together with some little empirical knowledge. From this I do not mean to decry the value and importance of the faculty of reason, for it has been the great factor operating, creating, progress of mankind. But like other finite faculties it is subject to erroneous exercise and cannot be depended on as a thing infallible. The common experience of men has shown that men 637, who have sincerely and earnestly and constantly exercised their reasoning faculties, have arrived at different and contradictory conclusions as to the same principles or subject matter, and those conclusions have been entirely satisfactory and convincing to the respective persons. Now it is apparent that in such instances all of these men could not possibly be correct in their conclusions, and in many cases not any of them were correct, yet they were all founded on the reason, properly and intelligently exercised, as they supposed. No, reason is fallible, and it is not a thing of itself, but dependent upon environments and sometimes inherited or preconceived ideas of what truth must be. It is the great friend and defender of speculation, and without it speculation could not exist, and so often is speculation deceived by its friend. Truth is that which exists as an unchangeable condition or fact, and speculation can neither create nor destroy truth, and reason is a means which may be used to reach truth when knowledge does not exist. But the fact that reason exists does not mean that it is always used in that way that leads to the discovery of truth. Reason, as I am now justified in saying, is but a creature of God, just as is everything else in his universe, and when given to man with the freedom of exercising it as man wills, is subject to all the possibilities of defective exercise that every other faculty possessed by man is subject to, and is no more infallible in its nature than are these other faculties. But it is the greatest faculty that man has as a creature of the Almighty, and without it, some of the wise of earth have said man would be no better than or different from the brute animal. But this is not quite true, for man is possessed with that which is really man himself that the brute animal does not have, and that is a soul made in the image of its creator. It may be said that reason is merely an appendage of the soul, and I have justification in asserting that the soul in its progress can do without or cast aside this reason without doing harm to itself because, as I have learned in progressing in the spirit life, the soul may and does arrive at that degree of development where reason is not necessary or even used by it in its acquirement of truth. I now believe, and without speculation, that reason is a gift to man to be useful to him only in his earth life and in a portion of this spirit life, until the soul comes into a knowledge of truth by the exercise of the mere desire to know. A knowledge of the whys and wherefores is not required, but it knows because it knows, just as in your earth life, the Paget Messages 1918, you have a knowledge of the sunlight even if you do not know the why and the wherefore that produce that light. Well, my newfound friend, I have written more than I intended, but as I continued I found the desire to write increase, and I fear that I have trespassed too long and pray your forgiveness. Sometime I should like to come and write of the errors of some of the teachings of earth, or rather of the truths along the line of the subject matter of my earthly writings, as I now know them to be. I am in what is called the intellectual planes of the fifth sphere and very near the entrance to the sixth sphere, in which I hope to be in a short time. It has been a long time since I left the earth life, and the early period of my existence in the spirit world was one of stagnation, and, as I now see, merely because I brought with me many of the doctrines of the philosophy of my earth life, and as a consequence I continued my research along the ideas and ways that I had pursued as a mortal. The time thus spent was long and continued until I became convinced that speculation in the spirit life is not very different and arrives at no more satisfactory end than speculation on earth, and then I stopped speculating and waited for something, I know not what. And strange to say, that which came to me was from a spirit who had never heard of my philosophy or any other philosophy on earth, but merely accepted truth as it gradually came to him, without knowing why or how. And I soon learned that he had a greater knowledge of the verities than had I, and so I adopted his way of receiving truth, and since then I have been progressing and am now advancing with accelerated speed, all to my happiness and intellectual enjoyment. Goodbye, your friend, Spinoza. I am here, John. Let me say just a word, and that is, that I have been waiting with some interest until the spirit who has just written you, Spinoza, finished his writing. I see that you are feeling very much better physically and spiritually, and now I know that we can make the rapport with you that will enable us to write our messages, and so I hope that tomorrow night you will give us the opportunity to write. What the spirit wrote, I know, was quite interesting, but it is not of the vital, and the time, for the present, must not be consumed by messages of this kind. After we shall have finished 638, the messages that we intend for the book, these messages of the kind just written may be received, for they have a work to do in the plan that we have in view. I will not write more now, except to say that we are with you very much, and pray to the Father for you and try to help you with our love and influence. So remember what I have written, and pray to the Father. Good night, your brother in Christ, John. April 18, 1918. I am here, Jesus. I was with you tonight and heard what the preacher said, and some parts of his talk expressed the truth and some did not, and I should like to comment on what he said just now, but you are a little tired from the effect of the writings of the spirits who preceded me, and I will postpone my comments until later. I expressly wish to write on the subject of what God has to do with the war, and show how far the preacher was right. I know that men may be surprised at what I may say, but nevertheless I will state the truth as I know it. I also desire to finish my message on God, and as your condition is much improved I will do so very soon, and you must commence to write or permit me to write earlier in the evening, when you are fresh. I was with you last night as you prayed, and prayed with you, and you were benefited. I will continue to pray, for I desire and it is necessary that your soul have such development and get in such rapport with me as will enable me to write my deepest and highest messages of spiritual truths, and this can be brought about only by the love increasing in your soul and your becoming nearer and closer to the Father. And there is nothing in all the universe that can accomplish this result so certainly as the receiving of this love in your soul. In fact, there is nothing else, and you must pray and long for its inflowing. I will not write more now, so good night. Believe that I am with you often, throwing my love and influence about you. Well, I understand and am sorry that it has so far not worked out its end, but it will, I am sure, for the work has to be accomplished, and the attaining of these ends is necessary. Have a little more faith, and act on it. Your brother and friend, Jesus. I am here, your grandmother. Let me say that I have heard what the Master said and join with the Paget Messages 1918, him in advising you to keep up your faith and courage, for I know that which you desire will be accomplished and the means found for fulfilling the work and bringing it to a successful issue. We are all with you, trying to help you, and we will. Only do as the Master said and you will not fail or be disappointed in the end. Believe that I love you very much and am with you often. and that we will succeed. Good night, your grandmother. April 25, 1918. Let me write the line, Luke. I was with you tonight at the church and listened to what the preacher, Gordon, said in reference to religions and their point of contact, and was somewhat surprised at his declarations as to the analogy which he drew between the believers in the various so-called Christian religions. While, as you know, there is implanted in the souls of men a longing for that which tends to elevate and spiritualize them, even though this longing may not be consciously present with a large number of them, yet the beliefs as to the ways in which this longing may be made manifest and develop the spiritual nature of the soul are very different among those professing these various religions, and the ways are not equally efficacious in causing their spiritual development. Religion is a matter of soul and not of intellect, and the greater the development of the soul in the right direction, the higher will be the spiritual state or condition of the soul. Mere intellectual belief, no matter how intense and undoubting, will not tend to bring about this spiritual development, for religion is really nothing but the relationship and harmony of men's souls with the soul of God. The mind will not be sufficient to create this state, because the mind of man cannot possibly bring into harmony the soul of the Creator and that of the creature. Mind in its exercise may tend to awaken the soul to this possibility of relationship, but only the workings of the soul can effectuate the complete unity of the Creator and the created. Only soul can speak to soul, and mind is only a helper, provided the soul is alive in its longings. So it is apparent that that form of belief which is wholly of the intellect can have no common meeting place with that belief which is the result of the development of the soul. And hence, to say that men of all the various religions, just because 639, they are what are called Christians, are in an equal relationship to the Father, is erroneous and misleading. As regards the condition of man as the perfect man, these several religions may tend to bring about this state of perfection, if the moral precepts which they teach are observed and practiced by men. But as regards man as the divine angel, that is, as a spirit having in itself the essence of the divine, only that religion which teaches the true way to acquire this divinity can lead men to the atonement with the Father in his very nature. There can be, in this respect, only one true religion, and only one way in which that religion can be practiced and possessed, and to say that all religions have a common point of approach is misleading and deceiving. Those who have found the way to the method of becoming transformed into the divine nature of the Father, and this notwithstanding that the teachings and creeds of the several churches do not show the way to this soul development into the spiritual of the divine. But in these churches there is wanting, in their dogmas and doctrines, that which will help men to this true religion. Because it may be found that in the churches there are some who have, to a degree, this divine spirituality, there is no justification in saying that there is any common place of meeting in these several religions. Of course, the moral precepts may be and are taught by all the Christian churches, and when observed will ultimately lead all men to the condition of the perfect natural man. And only to this extent can it be said that they may have a common ground of religion arising from the belief in the moral teachings. And the church which declares and teaches as its religion with great exactness and more enlarged comprehension is the church in which this, as I may call it, natural religion exists. And the more dissimilar these churches are in these teachings, the further apart is their approach. If a preacher of one church knows, with the conviction that arises from his sincere and honest investigation of the moral laws, that some other church is not teaching or insisting on the observation on the part of its members of these great moral truths, then he has no right to conclude and say this latter church is the possessor of religion, as is the church in which these moral truths are taught and followed by its adherents. The Paget Messages 1918, it is a mistake for a preacher to say that because there may be good and spiritual men in all churches, therefore, one church is as good and religious in its teachings as another church. Truth is of such a nature that it cannot be compromised, and the man or preacher who would compromise the truth is not fulfilling his duty to God or man. The church which teaches that there is nothing greater than morality, and that man can become no more transcendent than the perfect man, is devoid of the truth and would not be accepted as a teacher of the full truth, as should the church which knows and teaches the way by which man may become a divine angel. That the preachers of the various churches should accept as equal and the possessors of the true religion whenever these moral lessons are alike taught by these churches and have a common point of approach, is not to be wondered at, because these preachers do not know the higher religion, or are able to teach the way to the same. And when it is understood that a moral truth is a truth no matter where it may appear and by whom taught, there is some justification in declaring that all churches which teach the moral truths are on a plane of equality, and that one is entitled to as much respect and freedom from criticism as another. And further, as the great truth of the Rebstoel of the potentiality of receiving the divine love, and the effect on men's souls, was never known and taught until the coming of the Master, it is not surprising that none of the churches can or do teach this great spiritual truth. And the only true religion arising therefrom. The knowledge of this truth perished from the earth a short time after the passing of the Master, and hence no church can teach this religion of the soul that transforms the mortal into the divine. The religion of the perfect man may exist in varying degrees in all the Christian churches, but the religion of the divine angel exists in none, although some individuals of these churches, to some extent, have received in their souls the great truth, the divine love, even though they have no intellectual knowledge of the same. I thought it advisable to make these few remarks on the declaration of the preacher, as showing that his broad assertion that the religions mentioned, which to him is all-embracing, may have a common meeting point with every religion. When he learns the truth, he will realize the errors of his human and brotherly declarations. I will not write more. Good night and God bless you. Your brother in Christ, Luke. April 27, 1918. I am here, Ross Perry. Let me write a line, for I am very desirous of again communicating to you the fact that I am progressing and have found the love of which you first told me and which information led to my seeking it. I know that you are very much interested in the higher messages and want to give your time to receiving them and that it is almost impudence for me to intrude, but I have asked your wife if I will interfere with any of these messages tonight by my writing and she informed me that it would not, as none of these messages would be written tonight. So I feel somewhat at liberty to write and I hope that you will consider that I am not intruding. Well, since last I wrote you, I have been praying to the Father with all the longing of my soul for an increase of His love and realize that it has come into my soul in greater abundance and I am correspondingly happy. I shall soon be in the third, spirit, sphere, so the spirit friends who have been so kind and loving to me, tell me, and it gives me much happiness to know that such a prospect is opened up to me, for I can, because of the progress that I have already made, and realize to some extent what a home in that sphere will mean to me. I would like to write you a long letter tonight, but I must not detain you. But this I want you to remember that I am very happy now, and my sufferings have left and I know that all these blessings came to me because of the workings of the divine love in my soul. It is wonderful what that love can accomplish in the way of rescuing a sinful soul from its surroundings of darkness and from suffering. The law of compensation, which is a great truth, does its work without hesitation or partiality, or interference by any god or angel in the way of commanding it to cease its work, but this great divine love is more powerful than the law and when it enters into the soul of a man or spirit it in effect says to this law, you shall no longer operate on the soul of the sinner that was, because it will take that soul away from and outside the operations of the law. How little men understand this working of the divine love. It does not set aside the law, but it merely removes the soul in which it has found a lodgment from the scope of the operation of the law. The law goes on but the objects of its 640, the Paget Messages 1918, operations are rescued from the same. No law is set aside which men think and argue is necessary in order for a soul to be saved from its penalties and when on earth I believed this too, and did not believe in or accept the doctrine of the special interposition of divine providence to succor men from the consequence of their sins and that I did not believe because I thought that the only way in which this could be accomplished was for God to say to the law, you shall cease to operate. But now I know, that, while the law never ceases to operate until the penalties that are called for are paid, yet this love is above the law, though not antagonistic to it. I wish that I might write more on this subject tonight, as to me, it is one of the most wonderful truths in God's universe of spirit, and I never cease to meditate upon it and thank the Father that I was made a real example of the power of this love. Well, I must stop now, but when you have time I should like to come and write at more length. I see that my wife has not progressed in learning the truth, and I am very sorry. Well, friend, good night. Your friend, Ross Perry. I am here, your own true and loving Helen. Well, dear, I see that you are not just in condition for very lengthy writing tonight, and I will say only a few words. Your condition though is much better, and there is no reason why you cannot receive the messages that have so long been delayed, and I trust that you will do so very soon. I am glad that Perry wrote you as he did. He is very enthusiastic over his knowledge and experience of the divine love, and is now quite happy and progressing. Love me and think of me and pray to the Father. Good night. Your own true and loving, Helen. April 28, 1918. I am here, James. I am here and desire to say a few words, as I have been with you this evening at the church and listened to the lecture of the preacher, and feel that he misapplied his opportunity for furnishing his hearers spiritual food which they all are so much in need of, and which in many cases their souls are longing and crying for. The lecture of the preacher was instructive in a certain way and appealed to the sympathies and better nature of those who heard it, but it contained 641, nothing that tried to open up the souls of men to the divine love of the Father, or show them the way to the celestial kingdom of the Master, or the way in which they may become divine in their soul qualities of love, or in perfect union with the spirit love of the Father. I do not know that what I have said will serve any good purpose, but yet I thought it best for me to communicate to you their thoughts. Perhaps they may do some good in the future when you come to demonstrate the truths that you have received. I will not write more. Good night, James. I am here, Helen. I am your own true and loving Helen. Well, dear, I have been with you a very great deal today and know just how you have felt and experienced a happiness in your soul arriving from the thoughts that you had in reference to things of the soul. I will not attempt now to comment on either of the sermons that you heard, but I know just what thoughts you had in reference to the same, and your thoughts were as my thoughts. It is so important but sad that the preachers have not had more information of the truth so that they might tell their hearers. Tonight the Master was with you and listened to the lecture and impressed you with the thoughts that you had, and felt that he would like to be able to tell the preacher just what his future is. He is a representative, as he claims, of the Christian teachings, with a duty upon him to give forth these teachings to his people, yet he failed to do so. It is pitiable that such condition of ignorance of the truth exists among the ministers of the gospel. But it is so, and no help can apparently be offered them until the truths that you are receiving shall be published and spread among them. The Master would have written tonight had circumstances been altogether favorable, but they were not, and he will come very soon and communicate. I will not write more now. So, my dear, love me and pray to the Father for his love. Good night, your own true and loving, Helen. May 1, 1918. I am here, Mary Kennedy. I will write a few lines if you will consent, and I know you will, for Helen says that you receive so many letters of love, the Paget messages 1918, and encouragement from her, that you are wholly sympathetic whenever other soulmates desire to write to their other halves on earth, and especially when I come to write to mine, and Helen knows and never tells me an untruth except when she is trying to plague or tease me. Well, I am very glad that I can write once more to Leslie, for it has been a long time, as it seems to me, since I wrote him, and I believe that he thinks so, too. I know that he is interested in me all the time, for the reason that I know he loves me, and where loves enter there can be no want of interest, and so it must be. I am very happy and am progressing all the time in my soul qualities, and in my position in the soul spheres where only the divine love exists, except the other love which belongs only to soulmates. Since I have become an inhabitant of the celestial spheres and realized what an absorbing thing the divine love is, I wonder that I can have so much of this soulmate love as I do, when I realize the fact, and know, that no other love exists in our spheres except the divine love and our soulmate love. No love of mother or father, or any other love that belong to the relationship of the human life has any place in our existence or happiness, for spirits cease to have brothers and mothers and other relations, but all are as one great brotherhood, whose nearness and unity depends upon the amount of the divine love that enters into the souls of the respective spirits, and in this, the divine love is different from our soulmate love in that the former is of one nature and substance, though possessed by spirits in different degrees, and is of the same quality and may be possessed by the souls of spirits alike, while the latter belongs only to the two soulmates, and no other spirit can enter into or possess any portion of that love which belongs to the two soulmates alone. I often think of this fact, and how good is the Father in giving us this great love which we partake of in common with all other spirits. Yet, let us have this soulmate love all to ourselves. This may at first seem to partake of the element of selfishness, but it is not, because, while one of the two souls can and does have it, yet, no other soul is thereby deprived of any love that would make them unhappy or that would afford them any greater happiness. It is not selfishness but merely the possession of that which in itself makes the love of the two individual. Now, from what I have said you must not infer that when we become inhabitants of the celestial spheres all the loves that were ours when on earth by reason of our human relationship are not with us, for it would not be true to make such an inference. The explanation is that the objects and the place of existence of the objects of our loves, determines whether we continue to have this love of a human relationship. If our parents or brothers or sisters, or others having a relationship whom we loved when on earth, continued to live in the flesh, or even in the lower spheres of the spirit world, then our earth love, as I may call it, remains with us, and our dear ones are just as much, or to a greater degree loved than when we were on earth or in the lower spheres, and out of that love grows our desire to help and influence for good our relatives. But when these relatives become with us inhabitants of the celestial spheres, where the divine love is the great love belonging to us all, then, the love that is possessed by reason of being relatives one to another, leaves us and has no influence. As long as you remain mortals we love you as parents or children or other relatives, but when you come with us to the celestial heavens there remains no reason why such love should continue, for this divine love is sufficient for all and supersedes these other loves. Well, I love my Leslie, and I will love him for and through all eternity because I know that he will come to me in my home and be united, his soul to mine. I am with him a great deal and my love for him never dies down or ceases to exercise its influence upon his soul, and never will so long as we remain separated, which will not continue very long, as we who are in eternity view it. I have written too long already and must stop. But I want to tell him that he has his angels around and with him very much, and he is never left alone. When he prays, as I know he does, we are all with him praying to the Father for a greater inflowing of his love into my dear one's soul. Oh, how I wish that I could tell him of the extent of my love and what it means to him, and how much I want all the love that he can give me. He must think of me and keep up his courage and faith in the truths that have come to him, for he will never be disappointed in that faith or in the expectations that come from it. Good night, my dear one. Your own loving, Mary. 642, The Paget Messages 1918, May 16, 1918. I am here, Charles T. Wilson. Let me write a few lines. I am the friend of Dr. Stone and knew him some years ago when he was living in Buffalo, NY. I was in a hospital where he was engaged in looking after daffy mortals, such as I was. Well, in those days my mind and my brain did not coordinate, and this I know, for a short time after I passed into spirit life I found that I had a mind which enabled me to understand things as I had before the awful blank came to me which resulted in my being incarcerated in the hospital. What a wonderful experience I had after I became liberated from the imprisonment of my mind in a diseased brain. Then everything appeared to me as if I were a new creature, and the happiness which came to me, I mean the happiness that came from my liberated mind, is beyond what you may conceive of. Actions must be not unhappy, because they know not the loss of the benefits that a mind in a sound brain affords. But in this supposition men are mistaken. For while the person thus afflicted may not know of what sound-minded men call real trouble and worry, Yet they have troubles which belong to their diseased brains, and to them these troubles, although they may have no real existence, are just as real as are the troubles of these others who think that they are sane. Trouble is a relative thing, and the real to one, though not real, causes as much unhappiness as do the troubles which are real. Of course, while I was in the flesh I did not fully understand just what my condition of mind was, and many of my vagaries were of such a character as to cause me apparent happiness, and on the other hand, certain other vagaries caused me real suffering,